Hello, Sam, and hello, everyone who is joining us. This is, we're just starting a special, this is a breaking development. Although the story itself is only less than 48 hours old, it has some significant ramification. Hello, Sam, how are you?
I'm very well, how can it?
Good, good, good. I think we'll be joined by Guta, and hopefully Simon will be able to join us. We're not going to spend too much time on this one today. This is going to be very focused, very specific, and we'll have the opportunity to peel that onion further at a later time. So we're not going to. We'll wait maybe another 30 seconds before we start digging into this. The topic of the conversation today is the escalation in the geopolitical warfare as a result of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, the invasion, and the usage of cyber war and technology as a new dimension in warfare today. And this has some significant issues that I think most stakeholders, and especially decision makers, are really not aware. One of them, in my very humble but professional opinion, is does not matter how big you are, how significantly strong you are, how advanced in technology you are, in the realm of cyber warfare, you are not immune. Nobody is immune. The David and Goliath is quite relevant in this day and age. And to a large extent, technology and the advent of the internet and vulnerability in cyberspace have created the possibility of David being able to compromise a Goliath at a major scale. With that in mind, maybe we'll kick it off. Sam, I want to give you the floor to take us through the latest developments and set the stage so we can have some relevant discussions and the ramification of all this.
Yes, thanks, Khalid. So some interesting news came out, came very fresh this week. Probably unprecedented event, because we have a digital rights watchdog group called Citizen Lab, who warned British officials that their mobile phones and electronic devices connected to UK government networks, including some inside the British Prime Minister's office and foreign ministry, appeared to be infected with Israeli-made spy software, the spyware, which is known as Pegasus. Pegasus is a notorious product of Israeli cyber arms organization, cyber arms dealer, cyber weapon manufacturer called NSO Group. And NSO Group has been in a spotlight over the few years about the Pegasus and some unprecedented attacks. However, I think what we have this week, and the reason why it's unprecedented, is because now it is the actual UK government being targeted. It's not protesters, not journalists. It is actually the government. So the confirmation came that there was observed and notified instances of Pegasus spyware infection within the official UK networks. There was the British government spokesperson said that they don't routinely comment on security and cyber security matters. However, this comes in the middle of the Russia-Ukraine situation, and of course there is now an increased concerns over cyber attacks. Which is, of course, the amount of cyber attacks and cyber war incidents escalating daily. The other interesting thing happening today as well is, as a result of this, actually NATO was doing their own cyber war simulation at the time where this particular hacking occurred. There was also a link to the UK Foreign Office, which is currently said UK Foreign Office is urgently investigating a suspected cyber attack, and the reason for that is because there were some personal details of UK government employees which appeared on Russian social media sites. Well, that's the news update for today, Khalid. So what do you think of this latest development?
Well, this is why we chose to make this as a critical topic on a Friday, when in many parts of Europe people are just heading for the weekend. But you know what? Such developments don't have a timeline, and they really need to be paid attention fundamentally. And you addressed part of this, and I'm going to elaborate more. Pegasus, which is known as an Israeli spyware, which was also attributed for the spying on journalist Jamal Khashoggi, which ended up him being murdered at the Saudi embassy, etc. What's critical about Pegasus here is no usage of the Pegasus spyware or of the NSO's group's products are allowed without the consent and the permission of the Israeli government. In other words, there's a license that is attached with the political apparatus of Israel and the government to actually authorize the use of this. So, for example, if Joe Schmo decides he wants to use Pegasus and submits an application to buy the service and buy the license, the Israeli government has to approve that such sale and such use. Therefore, and this is the big therefore, whoever has used the Pegasus spyware, not only to allegedly or potentially hack Boris Johnson's mobile phone, but also the network of 10 Downing Streets and many of the staff's details, whose details appeared on a Russian social media website, must have had approval by the Israeli government. This is fundamental. Now, unless the Israeli government says no, whoever used it doesn't have a license, and they proceed to actually prosecute that user or do something else, we're going to hold accountable the Israeli government alongside Pegasus for this breach of the UK government's Prime Minister's mobile phone and its the staff of 10 Downing Street. This is critical because at the bottom line here is Israel is believed as an ally of the West, an ally of the British government, ally of the American government, and ally of everybody under the sun. But for some reason, when they do such unacceptable illegal activity, let alone immoral activity, nobody's holding them to account. So this is why this is quite significant, because it's a new escalation in the geopolycyber warfare. This is, you know, we label this session as cyber war so that people understand it's about cyber war. But if you can't name the threat, you cannot mitigate the threat. If you keep calling it cyber war, you're still thinking that the methodology to mitigate this threat is purely technology. It is not. Technology is a critical component, but it is not the sole component in mitigating these threats. So this is really where I think this is quite significant. Plus, it also illustrates that no one is immune. Everybody around the world knows how advanced the UK and the US in the sphere of cyber technology, cyber security, cyber warfare, offensively and defensively. For the UK government and the brain of the empire, of the British Empire, which is 10 Downing Street, to be compromised in the same manner as the brain of the greatest empire on the planet, which is the US government, the White House communications was compromised a few months before President Trump left office, and the data and the computers and mobile phones of more than 150 staff at the White House were compromised. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the data of the brain and the plans and the strategic plans of the one of the greatest, not the, the greatest empire on the planet. So somebody who can actually hack into this and monitor and learn, they are learning things that are totally unprecedented, with ability to do unprecedented acts as well. So this is quite significant, and I think this is what needs to be highlighted. Stan, what would you comment on what I've just said?
Yeah, I completely agree, because we've seen kind of similar attacks using Pegasus happening not on governments. We've seen governments using the Pegasus spyware on non-government people, on protesters, activists, journalists. But this is, for the first time, it was indeed a thing that unprecedentedly used against UK government. Very interestingly, that there was a device located inside Downing Street. And of course, reading the latest article published by the Times, but the fact that the Boris Johnson's mobile phone was analyzed by the cybercrime investigators, and that's just been reported yesterday. And what we can see from the quite scarce reporting of this incident is that the Citizen Lab, the international cybersecurity body which unearthed this infiltration, actually believes that it came via the organization which might be linked to the United Arab Emirates. So what would you say about the UAE involvement, Kai?
Well, this is quite significant, because one of the things we both know in terms of the cyber stuff, where I'm using the word stuff generically, is when it comes to attribution, it is virtually impossible to be 100% certain of attribution, in other words, to identify who did it. In the cyberspace, whenever a government or an organization leads to a conclusion to say, well, we believe this entity did this or this country did this, it cannot be just purely because of the breadcrumbs that they identified when they do the forensics. Because the breadcrumbs can be, for lack of a better term, doctored. The more sophisticated the hackers are, the greater their ability to actually doctor the evidence. Often what you end up doing is you actually corroborate intelligence from different sources to conclude that this is likely, highly likely, significantly, highly likely, super highly likely, etc. So the fact that the report, what we know so far is there are scattered information, and the information is not conclusive in any way, shape, or form. However, what we know here is the breach has happened. Pegasus spyware has been found on the network of 10 Downing Street. The reports say that the mobile of the Prime Minister has been checked out, screened. They have not said if it has been infected or compromised or not. And likelihood is they would not disclose this. They shouldn't be disclosing this for obvious reason. We can put one and one together. And one of the things that I actually conclude from what we know so far is the license that Pegasus was given and approved by the Israeli government for usage came from governments. I'm not aware of individual companies, private sector companies, who have acquired the license from Pegasus and got approval by the Israeli government to operate the Pegasus spyware. If that may be the case, they may have, because they don't disclose who is. But when the scandal of Pegasus and the reports of them compromising heads of state's mobile phone. Emmanuel Macron's mobile was compromised by Pegasus. There was a couple of other government presidents and prime ministers and ministers that have had their phones compromised. That actually raised the information and the awareness that what's going on with their Pegasus, and as a result, Pegasus was forced to disclose some of the governments that to whom they sold the license, and they got approval by the Israeli government to use them. some of them, and most of them have had human rights issues. The issue here is we don't know if Pegasus have been sold to private parties. So if we only know it's a government, it's possible to link this with the UAE, but I would not find this a conclusive report, because it's very difficult to assign attribution. It's possible it could have been the UAE, but the UAE has acquired the license of Pegasus and has been using it. So that's a known fact. Sam, over to you.
Thanks for that insight, Khalid. So if we go back to our previous that we run here in the cyber war and geopolitics cyber club here on Clubhouse, we spoke about another unprecedented event, and in that event when we had a situation where a lot of the Russian government officials' personal data was actually published. It was leaked by the hacking collective known as Anonymous. Now we have a different situation where we have the UK government being infiltrated. So obviously in the current situation and cyber war between Russia and UK, what is your take on the link of this event and this incident with the ongoing Russia-Ukraine conflict?
Well, it's along the lines that we discussed before, but I think this elevates it. This is why we talk about escalation, and I've just posted in the group chat for those who are interested the story that Survivability News has posted on this. What I find daunting is this is the escalation I fear, and I continue to fear, and there's no cap in sight. There's no possibility of any good sense to actually slow this development down. If you recall, Sam, when we did our last session, we talked about how the escalation was taking shape in so many in tit for tat. Russian advocates were hacking critical national infrastructure in Ukraine. Likewise, Ukrainian government and their supporters were hacking Russian sites. The Ukrainian government were considering passing a law, and they called in for their own supporters all over the world, and they were considering that they could go and to be able to go and use the embassies and the consulates of the Ukraine around the world as the location where these cyber hackers will go and operate from to attack Russian interests, and so that way they would get political immunity from any prosecution, because they would be operating from within the jurisdiction of Ukrainian sovereignty if they do the hacking from, let's say, embassies or consulates, which is really like opening the Pandora's box on, you know, gunslingers from all over the world being able to go and do what they want to do and advocate this. And one of the other things we discussed, Sam, if you recall, and please elaborate on this, the Australian Parliament considering making it legal, so that, which currently is illegal, to actually have sort of like mercenaries or supporters for hire to go and do your own, to help you out in your cyber warfare. Any cyber attack on anybody by most countries is an illegal thing. So somehow there was a Western nation considering to make, well, in some cases, we can make this legal. So where does this end? I personally and professionally believe that there has to be some kind of an initiative to stop all of this escalation, because no one is immune. Critical national infrastructure is being attacked. When those infrastructures are compromised, people's lives and livelihoods in their hundreds of thousands, in their millions, all of a sudden are brought to a standstill. That means water supply, gas supply, electricity. Society is really at the juncture of serious peril if we don't do something about this. The other part here is I truly believe there has to be some common sense when it comes to the geopolitical development of the actual war of the Ukraine and Russia, so that this war does not continue for much longer. It's going to stop very, very soon. Sam?
I think very important topic that we discussed before, which was another unprecedented thing, that the cyber war escalation now reached a very interesting point where the Australian government was looking to modify their cybersecurity laws to allow people to go into the Ukrainian embassies and consulates and perform cyber attacks on Russia without being prosecuted. And I think there is a similar initiative happening with other other countries considering the same situation, which I think is completely unprecedented because, as you know, at the moment, any cyber attack, doesn't matter whatever the motivation is considered to be a crime, and it is prosecuted quite heavily. And just brings me to another interesting topic, Khalid, about cybercrime and prosecution in modern world. Because, as you know, Julian Assange has recently been case been reviewed by the court here in the UK, and his extradition approval has been granted. And can you talk to us a little bit about your view on Julian Assange's situation, Khalid, please?
Yes, I'm happy to do that. And I find that this really goes to the heart of the subject matter that we've all been witnessing for the last, for many, many years about the double standards. I mean, Julian Assange, if you consider him as a journalist, what he did was disclose information that he received that pertained to illegal activities that a superpower was engaging in. Now he's been prosecuted. There have been stories, if people remember, there was all of a sudden two ladies, Scandinavian ladies, I can't remember whether they were Swedish or Finnish or whatever, who claimed he, what was that?
They were from Sweden.
Sweden, thank you, Guta. Basically, and the whole thing dropped, and they were there was never even sexual harassment. It was just like he must have said something to them, whatever. And it became such a storyline. The man has been persecuted, not prosecuted. I never had doubt that the U.S. will never relent in trying to get him because they want to use this as an example for whistleblowers. But the truth of the matter here is Julian Assange is not a whistleblower. He's not like Manning, who actually had information, or Sam, the gentleman who's living in Russia now, Snowden. He's not Snowden. Snowden is a whistleblower. Manning was a whistleblower. Assange is a publisher of the information by all standards. He would be considered a journalist. So where's the freedom? Where's the holding our public officials accountable? All of that stuff. So it makes me it raises the issue about the double standard. Last but not least, I just want to make everybody know in this room, we're only going to be on for another 6 minutes. This is going to be short, sweet, to the point. We will do many of those in this format because we're not going to debate this forever. If anybody has a question, they want to raise it, a brief point, please make yourself known, raise your hand so we can give you the floor before we close the session. Sam, I hope I answered your question about Julian Assange.
Yes, thank you, Khalid. Let's now see if there are any questions. There were some questions in the chat. Do you want to read them? There's some questions and comments and address them.
I think we can try to bring Sarah up or Mike or Jenji, Linda. And as for Assange, I think it's, to be honest, as a journalist, I find it very complicated, the situation, especially that he's going to report to be judged by a military court on top of it, and facing around 175 years, right? And we see so many attacks and undermine of our institutions. I'm totally against the course that's going, the situation with Julian Assange, to be very honest with you guys.
No, we agree. I personally, I don't see it as complicated as you said, Guta. Maybe you meant to say something else. I see it as much simpler than this. Julian Assange should not be prosecuted for this. It is a witch hunt, and it's a witch hunt because he compromised those who are in the special favor of decision making in the U.S. and who are not doing, in my opinion, what is representative, what's in the best interest of the American people. So it is not in the American people to lie. I think if anybody remembers, one of the things he is accused of disclosing was the information on a helicopter attack which killed journalists, if I remember certainly correctly, during the Iraq war. And the footage of the video became disclosed all over the world. And basically, I recall the commander of the helicopter identified groups, and he said they look like they're carrying something. It could be weapons. And then he asked for approval to shoot. He was granted permission to shoot. He engaged, killed them all. And later on, it was discovered these were reporters, some of them were Reuters reporters, that were carrying cameras. Yeah. So the interesting part was here, the U.S. government went and started to hide this, and they didn't want this disclosed. Had they come clean and said, look, mistake, maybe somebody would have said, okay, fine.
If I'm not mistaken, it's 2011, right, all that stuff. And the thing is that, if you want to raise more on this, that a lot of journalists in those, especially in the conflict areas, they are targets themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really know, you know, it's kind of shady, the whole thing.
No, without a doubt. And here's the other point that brings us back to the subject matter of today. With news agencies and organizations and major networks and traditional, you know, who are in the good favor of governments, they get the scoops and they end up doing the, what you call it, selling the narratives that the government wants to sell. Along the lines we talked about in previous sessions, how both the Fox News and the CNNs of the West and in the US were labeling the war, the Russian invasion of Ukraine as unprovoked. We all know that Russia has been provoked for the last 20 years about its national security by putting many of what used to be countries that belonged within the former Soviet bloc, who now became part of NATO, and Ukraine was one of those countries that have been hyped to join NATO. Ukraine has had nuclear capabilities and facilities which, when it became independent, they were all taken out. So the ability of Ukraine joining NATO and joining and being able to deploy nuclear weapons aimed at Russia by NATO is a very real threat. And this has been a conversation this is a threat that's been going on for 15, 20 years. But the media in the West, especially in the US, by both sides, the CNNs and the Fox, to label this unprovoked is a testimony to the failure of our of honest, unbiased, and objective journalism, which is why the whole thing about the war itself needs to be addressed, because this cannot be escalated. We cannot allow it to escalate any further. Anybody who wants, who's on the floor, to give them the floor before we close, Guta.
Yes, we have James, and we have Jawad, who is one of the brilliant minds here in Clubhouse, and a very dear friend. So it's only us. We do this a popcorn, and James, you open your mic and show this one.
Thank you, Guta. Jenkins, please, the microphone is yours.
Mr. Khalid, thank you for letting us speak. Thank you, Mr. Khalid.
Jenkins, your sound is a bit faint and you're breaking up. Could you speak a bit closer to your microphone, please? Thank you.
Sorry. Yes,
thank you.
let me talk and bring me up. It's a very interesting topic about what's going on in Ukraine, because I believe the war in Ukraine will determine the geopolitical landscape of the Middle East and Central Asia or South Asia, because Russians and Chinese are trying to gain more influence in those areas in Eastern Europe and Central Asia and South Asia or Middle East. It's a competition, both states, the war in Russia and Ukraine. It's basically a war, USA versus Russia. It's a proxy war, and it will have a direct impact on Afghanistan. I'm originally from Afghanistan. I followed Afghanistan from 2001 to 2021. What I can criticize about the American invasion of Afghanistan, you know, they use people from the north who are Tajik, Hazara, or Uzbek to remove the Taliban regime. But once they remove the Taliban regime, the Americans or NATO, they give the power to that ethnicity that supports the Taliban. So it's a hypocrisy, and that's why the Americans or NATO, they actually didn't want the war against the Taliban, because they didn't want to win the war against the Taliban. Because having the Taliban or Daesh in Afghanistan today, it's like an invisible army for NATO to Central Asian states, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, or Tajikistan, to make them Daesh sympathizers. So this country is
your point. Thank you, Jenkins. Your point is well taken. In fact, if I can recapitulate, most of what you said, I agree with. What I think is even more alarming is the rights of the prior to the invasion of Russia of the Ukraine, many of the neo-Nazi groups that existed in Ukraine, and they were very prevalent, were already blocked by, let's say, the Facebooks, the Twitter, and the many other social media websites around the world. Since the invasion, and since the call by Zelensky for help from the West to help them in the war, blah, 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 those neo-Nazi groups have actually been turned live. They're now no longer blocked on these social media networks. On top of that, for those who don't know, many of the ISIS fighters that were operating in Syria have actually been relocated now to Ukraine, and it makes me wonder how could the U.S. government and the strategists in the U.S. who knew ahead of time that the rhetoric of the U.S. government using the sanctions as a deterrent to tell President Putin not to invade was absolutely rhetoric. It was not going to work, because everybody should have known in advance with supply and demand and the fact that you cannot suffocate Russia's economy from selling oil and gas, primarily because you cannot stop the flow of oil and gas into Germany and Europe. Because to stop that and suffocate the economy of Russia means Germany would go down on its knees. So therefore, you're not going to be able to suffocate Russia economically with sanctions. Knowing this before the first bullet was fired meant that the strategists at the Pentagon and at the White House would have known that the sanctions would not work, and that Russia will revenue from oil and gas will increase. If they knew this in advance, why were they telling us that this approach was going to deter Putin? They knew it was not going to deter Putin, and Putin was going to invade, and they probably wanted him to invade. And the way I see it here is, look at Ukraine now. It's going to be a new failed state where only extremism of the highest level are going to operate, and for God knows whatever sinister purposes. We only have a couple of more minutes. Kuta, Jawad was there, but he's gone now. Is that correct?
Yes. We have also Sarah cannot speak. Please, Santa, Samaik, I invite everybody to stay to join the discussion. So if you want to just
Yes, thank you. Sarah, if you don't mind, can we make it brief so we can give the opportunity for others so that we're able to conclude in a timely fashion? Thank you very much.
Sarah cannot come. We don't have any. We're just finishing.
Okay, nobody's speaking anymore, is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so, fantastic. Thank you.
We have to wrap.
Thank you very much, Gutta. With that, I thank you all for joining us. The replay will be available shortly, and we will update you for our next session. And once again, thank you, have a great day, and stay safe wherever you are.
Thank you guys for coming. It's very nice. And I hope next time we all on stage to debate, because it's Khaled keeps saying it's very important, the security on the cyberspace and also our structures of freedom, especially freedom of speech, as we're talking today about Assange and how is the situation with the press all over the world as well, right, Khaled?
Thank you. Thank you, Gutta. Until next time, everyone, we'll see you soon and please stay safe. Take care. Bye-bye.